sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
The worst week for stocks in 2013. How to play JCPenney's earnings coming out this week? The 10-year yield is surging. And listen to questions, webinars, free trading software, and a brand new contest that you need to pay attention to. All this and much more on this episode, number 326 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Hello, Andrew Horowitz here, and it is the Disciplined Investor Podcast. What a week we had. We got lots to really cover and look back upon, and we also have a lot to talk about what's happening the next few weeks because the market complexion has changed a bit. We're seeing instead of every single run-up and then drop-down being bought, we're seeing a little bit of the opposite. We're seeing some sellers come in, and this could be simply nothing more than a time period when we're in between earnings seasons. It's the summer doldrums, very limited amount of trading volume, although the last several days on the downtick, we saw a pretty good volume come in, and matter of fact, that was a good sign that there was some institutional selling that's going on and distribution. But when we look at what is happening, remember something, that this market with the liquidity that we've been seeing over the last several years has had these kind of little fits and convulsions on the way down and then just recovers it all in about a day, 2 days. So really, we're not that much off of the high, although the Dow Jones Industrial Average has taken a little bit of a beating, but still we're not that much off of the highs that we saw on the markets. Big question is, what do you do now? You know, a lot of people have been looking for a downturn, a correction to take out some of the excess fluff. We talked about last week how the S&P 500, but moreover, the Russell 2000 was significantly overvalued from what we saw. And we did see a pretty good takedown of those, and it's still overvalued by a valuation standpoint. But does that really matter in the face of the fact that you have the Fed still there? I think we'll start off with that discussion because the whole idea of tapering has really been brought back to the markets after it seemingly was dropped like a hot potato after Bernanke said, hey, you know what, we're not doing anything right now, and you know, we don't know, and we're you know, looking at things, but we may adjust the levels at which we'll take down some of the buying of $85 billion a month. And all of a sudden, people are saying, wait a minute, he did say it. He kind of walked backwards on it, and now we think that bond prices are going to be, well, yes, they did. And a matter of fact, we saw that Fed Fisher came out last week and talked about, this was an absolutely brilliant discussion by him. He said, you know, bond prices are going up when there is a thought that, you know, the Fed will step in. But now bond prices are going down and yields are going up because a lot of people think that, well, tapering is going to start. Well, hello. I don't know what the point of that discussion was. What was the genius behind that? It was just, you know, some air-filling discussion. But what is happening is we are seeing the 10-year yield move higher. As a matter of fact, it was the highest it's been in several months. And, you know, I talked about this a number of months ago, how we thought that the actual increase of yields would be good for the economy. Now, increasing yields are not good for bonds. Increasing yields are not good for people that want mortgages because they have a higher level of interest they'll have to pay. Increasing yields are not good for anyone that has to issue bonds and for the Fed. And it's not usually good for the stock market. But let me share this little thought with you, and I want to just have this in the back of your mind. With the idea that the Fed will be there and always will be buying bonds and keeping interest rates low, doesn't that in itself cause a deflationary kind of spiral? Because if you think that prices will stay low, this is the whole idea behind deflation. If prices stay low and the investors or people or consumers think that they will continue to go down or at least stay at the levels that they are, there's no impetus, there's no rush, there's no need for them to go out and actively lock something in, because what's the hurry? Now, when you look at that for a second, what the Fed is trying to do, as they stated, is to increase inflation, thereby making people want to go out and buy goods and services now. And by doing so, that will create increased economic expansion and activity. And by doing that, again, it will kind of just mushroom upon itself. And what you get is a demand that comes into the markets. So what the Fed has done, though, by keeping interest rates down and saying on a regular basis how they're going to continue to be there, it's an exactly opposite of what they would want to do in terms of creating demand. Now, if interest rates started to go higher, you would see the potential for those that were looking to refinance or maybe buy a house for the first time, or maybe an existing home or sell theirs, they would go out and actively go and say, you know what? Interest rates are rising here. I better lock in now. I better move on this right now, because I may never see these rates again in my lifetime, because they are at ridiculously low levels at this point. In fact, I've talked to people and I hear over and over again that people are very concerned about the fact that they have a mortgage that they want to refinance, and they think that this is going to be the time, that is the last time that they will be able to see these kind of rates, and they are actively pursuing refinancing and all that is related to that. They're actively pursuing buying homes, et cetera. And that was because interest rates, at least the specter of interest rates going up, was there. So I think that even though, contrary to popular belief, the idea that interest rates moving higher is bad for everything, I think there is some good that comes out of it. I think it gets people off of the sidelines thinking about, you know what, I don't have to do anything with my bonds, I don't have to do anything with my stocks, I don't have to do anything with my mortgage, I'm fine. It gets them moving around. Now, it may not have the best implications for equities or for bonds initially, but if you can get the economy moving because people are actively buying homes and then construction moves, and when construction moves, there's new hires, and new hires yields additional economic expansion activity, et cetera. And you kind of go down the list of things that it does from not only the construction side, but also various different sectors and industries, that could be a good little shot in the arm for the economy in the short term that may allow for the economy to continue expanding. So just consider that. Now, obviously, here's the rub. Here's the problem. The problem is that you don't want bond yields spiking. You don't want this situation where you have a run on bonds, where the selling just really intensifies and it snowballs. And as that selling happens, the more selling goes on because everybody had these bonds over time and they have huge amounts of gains in it. And, you know, you can kind of map out what would happen if that did occur. Because if yields really moved higher very quickly, you're going to have a lot of trouble in money market funds. You're going to have a lot of trouble in bond funds. You're going to have investors who are going to just get crushed. You're going to have also the potential for the Fed to have some difficulty because of the amount of assets they own. And the issuance of bonds would be stalled because people are going to say, wait a minute, now bond prices are going down so fast, I don't know if I want to buy any of them right now. So you need to have a really good balance of the rise in interest rates. And therefore, what will happen is then you get all the good things that come along with it. But as we know, these markets and investors and hedge funds and institutions do what they do. They don't just go in or move out very slowly. They go in and just rush into whatever it is. They rush out. Look at what happened to gold over the last several months. I mean, you saw that there was a mass exodus. Look what happened with China and Japan. I mean, there was Japan, there was a massive move in. China, there was a move out. Emerging markets, the move out. Stocks in the U.S., I mean, you see this over and over. There's no waiting for anything. There's no ability to have a slow and steady move because we have these huge rips and drops that happen in all sorts of investment instruments, more sectors or markets. So one of the problems you will have is if you see this big spike, because it will really warp the valuations of bonds and the portfolios and the assets that are behind there. And that is something that needs to be watched. We call that skew, especially at these low rates. You know, I think I mentioned that, at least we mentioned on DH Unplugged, that there was a 65% increase in the yield of the 10-year Treasury since May. Now you may say, wow, that's a tremendous number. Yes, it is. On a percentage basis, it's enormous, especially in that period of time. Now, you have to realize that we're coming from a very low number. Even a 100% increase doesn't get us anywhere near the average normal levels that we've seen, you know, over the last several decades. We're still at very reduced valuations in terms of interest rates. So that number in itself is bad. The actual number of what it did move was not that tremendous, but the pricing move was large. And then you have what's called skew. When you see a very fast move and you see a very fast move that moves up because of, especially where the low base we start now, you get this skew and bond prices get really out of whack. A lot of losses happening on that, and that's where the rush will come in. So keep an eye on that. We talked about TBT and a few other instruments that could be interesting to look at. As a matter of fact, I have a listener question that came in. Let's see here. I have it somewhere here. I think. Yep. Right here. This is a question that came in from Don about a week ago. And he wrote to me. Of course, you could write to askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. We're actually creating a little portal where you can post questions there. And that will be ready soon. I'll make an announcement when that's ready on the site. But until then, you can just email me. He says, "Hi, Andrew. You heard my recent discussions regarding the selling opportunities of bonds. Couldn't agree more. But given that this is a long-term story, presumably not a short trade, wouldn't TBF be a better investment than TBT? I'd always heard that leveraged ETFs in any sort of volatile market degrade over time. The TBT is a two-time ETF, and the TBF is a one-time. My concept would be to put TBF for relatively long term, say while the economy still stays reasonably healthy. Would appreciate your thoughts." Now, of course, I do agree that there is the potential for degradation of the underlying if you have a two or three time multiple. But yet at the same time, if you've ever looked at when you have a very compressed move and you see that the move is elongated in one direction, oftentimes for that period, whether it's a 2 week or a month or whatever it may be, during that period, you can see substantial benefits from a multiple. Now, if in fact this takes 2 or 3 years to really play out and it moves up and down in this chop, of course you want to go with potentially a one time. Two times are interesting and they work. And when they start moving, they move very fast. And if they start moving in one direction, you can see them move very considerably. But the one time, if you're talking about a longer-term play, if you're just going to be, hey, I'm putting this in my portfolio, I believe that bonds have hit a high, you know, in terms of pricing, or they've hit their low that we're going to see in terms of yield, interest rate, then yes, it makes a lot of sense to utilize the one time and just put it in your portfolio, of course, if that is your plan. And I could say that also that you've seen TBT really rocket recently. We've had multiple days where it's been up. And again, that compounding effect really works well for the multiple. And the opposite is true as well. So that's a great question that you asked, Don. I appreciate you sending that in so we can kind of get to that. And it worked well with what we're talking about. And I think it's very timely to really hit upon that. With that in mind, we are going to see the Fed come out with their minutes on this week. Actually, it's going to be on Wednesday at 2:00. The Fed is releasing their minutes from the July 30th through the 31st meeting. And what are we going to see there? Well, I don't think we're going to see anything that is going to change the minds of anybody because there's no decision made there. It's just the minutes and the update of what they talked about. But the question is going to be, how many people inside the committee talked about, well, yeah, I do agree with that we could be tapering. There is the opportunity right now that the economy has strengthened to a point where at least we shouldn't be looking to have as much purchases as we had and start weaning the investment community off of this incredible elixir, which is the liquid amount of money that's being pushed into markets on a regular basis. That is not going to sit well, unfortunately, even though you see maybe that economic numbers look better and maybe some companies are doing better in terms of earnings. The concern is going to be that, number one, by taking this out of the market, you're going to see that liquidity is drying up, even a small amount. And the second thing is that there's going to be a thought process of, wait, is the Fed going to be out totally? And if so, how do we deal with things? You know, markets are so used to this multi-year amount of stimulus that has come in at enormous, just preposterous levels, that they're going to have some problems with this. Now, it may not be a significant downturn, but if you add that to earnings slowdown, revenue slowdown, and concern about many of the areas around the world, well, you know, you start getting a little bit more of a potential of a downstroke. Now, if you look back on history and you look at the time periods between when QE1 was started and when it ended, and the interim time that there was nothing announced till QE2, and then you do the same thing, look at the time period there, and then the time period where there's nothing until QE3, et cetera. There were some very sharp downturns during that period, and there's no coincidence that those downturns occurred once the Fed took their, you know, the little bit of their foot off the pedal a bit. There's no question about that. As a matter of fact, the correlation is extremely high when you look at the daily, weekly, monthly levels of money that has been put in the market through bond purchases, through any kind of Fed stimulus, and the reaction of the equity markets. It's really high. Tom McClellan and Corey Rosenblum have done amazing work on putting this together to see exactly how this plays out, and it's a day-for-day correlation that is remarkable. So this excess liquidity in the markets has been very helpful and is one of the reasons that you're seeing a lot of buy the dips and the continuation of a trend, on top of the fact that, yeah, maybe earnings got better and the economy got better, et cetera, but now you're going to pull one of those components out. So without going too in-depth in this any further and boring you to stitches, let's talk about some of the economics that are coming out next week, because we did see some disappointing numbers in the prior week. Earnings, we'll talk about that in a second, but when it comes to economics, we did see that the employment numbers on the initial claims were better again, one of the lowest we've seen in some time. We've seen that in the housing market, the NAHB survey came out last week, very strong, but we did see consumer confidence take an unexpected dip down. It's been perplexing how consumer confidence has been staying so high with all the things that are going on in terms of the payroll tax cuts, the world situation. The only thing that I could tell you is between the housing market being better, stabilizing and moving higher, and the stock market doing better, obviously people are focusing on that as their level of what they think they should be confident about moving forward. But we did see the August number, the preliminary that came out, and that was at 80. Expectations were for about 85 on the University of Michigan, and that was a pretty big disappointment. The Philly Fed, which is the big one that I always watch in terms of manufacturing, also came out, and that was a significant disappointment. Now, next week, we have some things that may reverse some of the thought on that. We have the Chicago Fed activity, which is a minor manufacturing number that I look at. We're looking for about a negative 0.1. We do have mortgage applications and existing homes coming out on Wednesday. Let me just look at the dates here. Yep, that's on Wednesday. And we do have existing home sales expected to be about 5.1 million units on an annualized basis, and that's an increase of about 1.4%. Prior was a negative 1.2% on a month-over-month basis. We'll see the initial jobless claims. The prior was about 320. That's what I was talking about that was good, that we saw this 320. Well, it's good, but it's still not great. But 320 is some of the best numbers we've seen since the, you know, big, massive amounts of layoffs that we saw back in 2008, 2009. We're also going to see the housing price index on a month-over-month basis, which is looking to rise about 0.6%. And we're going to have leading index and new home sales at the end of the week. New home sales are expected to dip down a little bit from where they were, but still some good numbers. We'll have to watch those home builders. If you've been watching those names, they've really been obliterated, except for the last couple of days of last week. They've been just chopped up to smithereens over the last couple of months. So about a 20% sell-off in many of these names. And the index themselves actually had the home builders index had about a 20% drop. So it wasn't just one particular company. It was a broad-based sell-off because expectations got so high and earnings were doing well. But yet at the same time, how much can this really expand? You saw numbers that were far less on earnings than we had seen in terms of revenue and all that, but earnings were good. And you saw stock prices just through the roof. I mean, just didn't stop for some time. We also have some earnings that I need to talk to you about. So here's something interesting. You know, the whole battle between, man, this thing is getting crazy. This whole battle between JCPenney and Herbalife and all these other big hedge fund names that are out there talking it up and talking it down at the same time. You got Ackman and Soros and Einhorn, and kind of keeps going on and on. But we are going to see JCPenney come out. Now, JCPenney, the big news last week was that Ackman, the hedge fund manager that owns the majority piece of the outside hedge fund amount of JCPenney, and who has been on the board, came out with a letter and said that the JCPenney CEO should be replaced. And that really didn't sit well with the board at all. It was a very strange situation that came up, and an awkward note that was disclosed by the... It was just really... it didn't leave a good taste in my mouth in terms of how that he was really playing this. You have to question whether or not there is some advanced knowledge on what the earnings are going to be and how there's going to be now blame put on the CEO, and therefore, you know, Ackman is looking to kind of point a finger here, and that's why he's saying he should be replaced. But in the end, Ackman resigned from the board. But again, you don't know if that's because there is good numbers coming out, or if it's known or not, or if just simply there is a real problem with his integration and his relationship with the board members. So you take that into your kind of into your bag of ideas about JCPenney. Let's also talk about the stock has been just beaten down to a pulp. And even though they have come back with some of the old deal specials and got away from some of the things that Ron Johnson was doing, you got to wonder still how much of the audience did they lose because they were just so out of touch with what was going on. And as they were trying to rebrand, restructure, they really not only lost the interest, but maybe permanently lost the interest of many of their customers. Well, they're expecting to have EPS of a dollar loss per share on about $1.3 billion. On $2.7 billion, pardon me. Now, estimates have come down dramatically. We see estimates over the last 4 weeks come down an enormous amount of drop by analysts, because we did see, of course, the numbers from, for example, Macy's and Walmart and a few other companies on the big box retail side miss their numbers, and probably that could be a bit of a read-through to JCPenney. Now, JCPenney did see a couple of days of up, a couple of days of down last week, and, you know, the real question right now is expectations and reality. Is there a overbearing amount of bearishness and negative sentiment on this stock with the amount of shorts that are out there and the amount of negative headlines that have been coming out on this? And that if they come in anywhere reasonably close, or, you know, you look at a $1 loss per share, you know, there's some that are saying $1.25. So if they come in somewhere in the range of this loss factor and they have not too much less than the revenue estimate, about 2.7, you know, will the stock see a dramatic amount of short covering coming into this? So we're looking at that. We have a very small position that we added to TDI Managed Growth Portfolios last week. And it's, again, not really anything more than a trading opportunity for a overarching negative sentiment and tremendous amount of short interest. We're also going to see, this is a big week, by the way, for retail. Retail is all over the place, and we have some home builders. I'll give you some of the list in the rundown here. We have Dick's Sporting Goods coming out on the 20th. They're going to be out before the market, looking for about a 75 cents per share on about $1.5 billion. We have Best Buy, which, if you look at that chart, wow, what a turnaround that has had. They're going to be coming out also on the 20th, 12 cents a share. They're expecting to earn on $9 billion. They're, all of these, by the way, that I'm about to list to you, have had their earnings estimates dropped over the last 4 weeks. We have Saks coming out, loss of 8 cents a share on about $730 million. TGX companies coming out same day before the market as well at 63 cents they're looking for. And about $6.3 billion, pretty substantial amount of revenue they're looking for there. Now, Intuit's going to be coming out. They make the tax software. I've always wondered, how they're going to continue to do well with competition, but more so, they're going to be able to maintain the level of earnings that they have. They're looking for a 1 cent loss per share on $620 million. You got the Home Depot coming out, which obviously had done very well for a while and then started to come back a little bit with the home builders. Looking for $1.21 on about $21 billion. And Target you have, after Walmart's numbers last week, you have to wonder how Target's going to fare here. Their numbers and estimates have been dropped by a very large number, looking for about $1.11 now on $17 billion. I mean, Toll Brothers coming out on the 21st, looking for about 26 cents. Let me go down this list here. Lowe's coming out also. We'll see that as a read-through from Home Depot. We'll be able to get some insight into that. They're going to be on the 21st, about 79 cents on $15 billion. Hewlett Packard should be fun to watch, see if any of the cost-cutting and changes that they've implemented have helped. 86 cents on the positive side they're looking for, $27 billion of revenue. And then we got Dollar Tree and Sears. And now, here's where it's going to get interesting. We got on the 22nd, we got Abercrombie & Fitch, we got The Gap, Ross, Aeropostale, and those should be really interesting to watch because there's been some concern about the teen retailers. Now, there's oftentimes been a divergence in these and in the teens, but usually when you see them move, they move awfully hard. So we have all this list on the website. You're going to see it on the Disciplined Investor .com. So if you want the entire list and all the different estimates and how much they've dropped or been raised over the last several weeks, you'll find that there. Take a look. Now, let's move on to the next area we're going to talk about here. We're going to talk about, we talked about economy, we talked about earnings, talked about the bond situation, right? We talked about all about that. So let's kind of get over to what's happening in markets in general. Now, we have this key reversal indicator that we've always talked about and some of the things that go along with that. And the big question is, where is that right now? Now, what I found interesting as a little bit of a background on this is that over the last several weeks, it was overvalued for a little while. It was kind of getting up there, but nothing really substantial. It was kind of sticking on the zero line as a market in equilibrium, meaning that, there was a good amount of buying, selling, and all the different components that go into this. And there really was no immediate danger to the markets in either direction. When you get something like a positive 5 or positive 6 or negative 5, you start getting into the point where, okay, negative 5, negative 6 is starting to say that you're really in at a level that could see a snapback very quickly because there's so much selling going on that it's almost a capitulation point. Same thing on a positive 5, positive 6. Goes up to a 7, by the way, as a max. We've only seen that once or twice in the last several years. And usually what happens is right after that, you do see a very quick move in the other direction. But when the markets are in equilibrium, when there's that zero level, plus one, minus one, there really is no major situation that is going to be immediate unless some outside source causes a big problem. And as a matter of fact, you do see sometimes that the VIX will come down in those kind of environments if it stays there a long period of time. Well, let me tell you where we are now. So we did see that zero level for some time popping up a little bit to the plus one, plus two. But again, kind of just staying there. We are now at a negative 3. As of Friday, we're at a negative 3 with the selling that went on and the fact that it wasn't on a positive line prior to that. So we're at a negative 3. What does that mean? Well, we did see already on Friday that there was an attempt to really turn the markets quickly, and that ended, and the market sold off very quickly towards the end of the session on Friday. But yet at the same time, you have to say, well, a negative 3, what does that mean? Well, a negative 3 is not at a point, at a level that I believe is screaming, oh my gosh, it's time to buy. Cut your shorts, move on. A negative 3 from where it was. It went to zero to about a negative one, negative two, then negative three on Friday. Sometimes it skips and goes down a couple levels, but it's at a negative three on Friday. It means there could be a continuation of the trend as we see it right now. Again, a zero is kind of, there's no trend, there's no specific trend. And without any other information to the contrary, you know, you would think that, of course, until the Fed totally says they're going to be slowing down, that there's going to be these buyers at the fringes that will continue to buy on any dip here. And we've seen a couple of days of that in a bad week. And as a matter of fact, two bad weeks in a row here. So there could be some reversal that is going to be occurring here. But unless that's very strong and it does follow through, the reality is that the trend right now is down. The trend right now is down, and we need to get a flush out of the markets. We need to get a flush down, however long that takes or wherever it is, till we could see a point that you could say, yeah, the KRI is indicating that there could be a very quick reversal. Now, that doesn't always happen. Sometimes you sit on a three and you kind of start moving higher. You got to watch for that as well. But yet, at the same time, oftentimes what we did see is you start getting a clump of these lower numbers or higher numbers, depending on what side you're on, and they start to come in. And once we get an area that is seeing a bulk of negatives that are clicking down to the negative fours, negative threes, negative four, you start seeing those come up. That's when you start thinking, wait a minute, now if we do see a definitive move to the downside, that's when your reversal really is good, because there's been a slow and steady pace on the downside. Stocks are being sold off. The psychology in the market is negative. And what you're seeing now is that there's a follow through here and then a final, you know, slam down. That's what you want to see, actually, for a healthy market condition to come back. If you keep on seeing this kind of situation where you have, you know, markets moving down, but just, you know, a day later taking it all back, that's not the healthiest of markets. It may be fun, but it's not the healthiest of market conditions. You want a market that can get rid of the excess and then move higher, or when it's down low, it can bring itself back up. You know, either side of the equation you need to look at very carefully. Now, the good news is that we actually did create the KRI indicator with some really neat graphics for the TradeStation platform. It's not up there yet. We're still in a little bit of the testing stage because we're adding a couple of components to this indicator, which is going to be, I think, fabulous. Now, this is not an indicator that you use on a 5-minute or 10-minute chart, and it really only deals with the broad markets because we want to see the broad market condition on this. That's what we're really looking for. But if just we can find the points that happen, you know, 4, 5, 6 times a year where you have it at a negative 5 or a positive 5, and you can see where that is and have some clarity on what the levels are and the potential for a turning point, think about that for a second if it works out well. And what you have there is really essentially a bit of a market timing tool or an indicator that gives you a concurrent reading with some of your other areas, and that's what we use it for. Now, again, it's not one of these things that you're going to deal with on an intraday time frame. It's just not going to work because too many things happen, there's not enough data. But yet, when you look at it over a longer period of time and you start watching the trend and watch where this thing goes, you know, you've seen historically when we post these, when we see the levels getting outside of the range, that it does work pretty well. It's not 100% because, again, you have outside influences that go on. You know, you can go from a plus one to a negative four in a couple of days, and there was nothing that indicated that other than maybe some crazy situation around the world or, you know, some domestic occurrence that happened. But barring that, utilizing this for a indicator that gives you a really good confirmation of trend and follow-through and turning points, which is more important for this, you should check that out. And we'll have a lot of this data that's coming up because we are offering all these indicators on the TradeStation Strategy Network. We have the altimeter. We have the radar. We have the autopilot. We have the simulator. Now we're going to have the KRI indicator. And all of these are available at trial on TradeStation. I told you last week, if you haven't tried TradeStation yet, and there's a free trial available through the end of the year for the platform, and you can try these different indicators also. Just go there and look up Trigger Charts, because we put it under the Trigger Charts company, and Trigger Charts in the Strategy Network, and you'll be able to find all the indicators that are available. But we're also going to have, I think I want to mention that coming up in September, and again, I'm going to give you more details when we get closer, we're going to be having some webinars on this, and you can learn how to use these. We're going to have one on the altimeter. It looks like we're going to do it about the 4th of September. We're going to have one on the 15th, 24th, and on October 4th that you'll be able to participate in. Plus, I will be on the TradeStation platform in September, which more information is coming, that they are going to be putting out to all the TradeStation users that this is accessible, and we're going to have a run-through and a webinar on the TradeStation platform to the TradeStation users on how to use this, what the benefits are, and all the things that go involved in all of these different indicators that you really need to check out. So that's something that I wanted to share with you. But, you know, what you'll get is that you can get free software for them right now. You can get free trials. The simulator is actually free forever, and it has a limitation on some of it, but you'll be able to utilize that for it's the same thing as Autopilot, which gives you a marking on a chart in color. It's very simple. Green is a buy, red is a sell a short. Orange is a moving out of a position, so you may be short and you're going to cover, or you're going to be long and you're going to sell. And yellow is a warning that, hey, this thing is about to move into a directional buy mode. And that you can use on any instrument, whether it's a future, Forex, stock, on any time frame, 30 minutes or more. Kind of cool stuff. I think you really enjoy that. All right, moving along. We have a contest is coming up on DH Unplugged. I don't know if you listen to DH Unplugged, but John C. Dvorak and myself, we talk every week about all sorts of different items. We take it a little bit differently than on this show. We really talk about the some of the comedic side of business, some of the funny things that are going on. We will take things apart and put them back together. Our personalities are, I'm kind of the analyst, if you will, and he's the man on the street. And he brings a lot of technology behind him and writing and knowledge for many years. And one of the things we decided to do is have a closest to the pin contest. Now, one of the things that listeners really like on our show is that we give away a few different stock ideas every single week, and we track them, and we have them on a special list over in Google Docs. And if you've listened, you know what I'm talking about. Well, what we thought we'd do is get listeners involved in it. So what we figured out what we'll do is we're going to have each and every week a stock. Pick a stock. And we'll say, okay, this week is going to be IBM. Whoever comes close to the price of IBM in the next 2 weeks, and we have a date and all that, will get a prize. And there's a variety of different things that we're offering. So listen in next week to DH Unplugged. It will come out on Wednesday morning on iTunes. You can hear it on dhunplugged.com, or you can listen to it on dvorak.org/blog. And when you do so, you'll hear all about the things that are going on and how to get your entry in each and every week. But I think that's going to be something a lot of fun, and we'll announce your name if you win. And you'll have something to take away from it as well if you get closest to the number. And we'll actually participate as well. John and I will also put in an entry each and every week, and we'll see, you know, where we come on this whole deal. Okay, so that's that. Now, let's talk about some of the news that's going on, because there's a little bit of some of the craziness is going on in Egypt. You know, do we pay attention to that or do we not? You know, right now, that's the latest excuse to bring the price of oil up, and oil's been doing pretty well in the face of these high inventories, which is still boggling my mind. There's going to be a day of reckoning for oil, because with the excess drilling that's been going on in the U.S. and the fines of the oil fields here, and also the fact that there is a bit of a slowdown in some of the world, you know, you have to say, what's going on with oil? So that's one of the biggest things that's happening right now in terms of oil prices. Gold also has been surging on the concern about what's going on in Egypt. If you watched gold last week, it was actually pretty disturbing, because you saw the markets coming in and gold going up, I mean, on a continual basis. Even Friday was up about $17 at one point. And, you know, we're getting really close to the 1400 line on gold, which is not as high as it was when it was, you know, 1700 or so. But that still is a pretty good move on what was a very bearish sentiment on gold for some time. And a lot of that has to do with what's going on in Egypt. And they are just, you know, having all sorts of difficulties there. The Muslim Brotherhood is protesting, and I guess that ended now, but there's a lot of bloodshed, a lot of people around the world that are very unhappy about this, talking about cutting off aid, etc. So keep an eye on that. Also, I want to mention to you that in China, there was something interesting that happened this week. You saw that China's new home prices rose for the third month in a row. And this is when there was some government action to actually slow down housing prices from moving higher, because the speculation that was going on was at a point that it was starting to be very concerning to the Chinese government that their banks were going to be, you know, very much in a situation where they are going to have a lot of losses potentially incurred if the market ever comes down. Well, they backed away from some of that. And, you know, what happened was that property prices moved up again. In fact, prices climbed in 69 of the 70 cities that the government tracks on a regular basis from a year earlier. And that is really substantial. The Southern Business Center of posted the biggest advance, which is really kind of interesting because you have a business sector that obviously would advance only if business was moving better. And yet we're seeing some softening in the Chinese numbers, but they rose 17% from a year earlier. Beijing and Shanghai rose 14%. It's pretty interesting that we're seeing that in a time, and you wonder if they're going to kind of crack down on this again. I mentioned about Fed Fisher, of course, and his discussion about how, of course, that bonds are going to be, you know, moving if the Fed is tapering, etc. But back to China for a second. I don't know if you saw the story, because it really, I didn't see it in many places, but I thought this was something that you have to know about. That there was a big, I guess it would be a flash, wouldn't be a crash, it would be a flash surge in the Chinese markets. Everbright Securities, who is the Chinese state-controlled brokerage, which has had some falling profits and all sorts of negative things that are going on with them. It seemed that they had either a fat finger or something weird happened there, that they something that was that they did caused a surge of about 6.5% in the Shanghai index last week, and that was pretty substantial if you think about it for a second. You saw that there was let me see what this was to get the exact data on this, because I thought it was really interesting. Shanghai Bourse rose about 6.7% to, let's see here. There was this big draw, and then it came back, and everything moved back. And there was all sorts of things that went on, and in that, I don't know where this data is. I was looking for this here. I have it somewhere. Well, I don't have it here. Anyway, there was something that was crazy here. The other thing that I'll mention is that, oh, here it is. Hold on. Maybe I have it here. Evernote, thank you. Let's see here. 53% surge in volume. Here it is. The gauge jumped from a loss of about 1% to a gain of about 5.6%. So again, we're talking about 6.5% in about the time of 2 minutes. And it was the prop desk of Everbright who caused this rally, which is really just quite incredible. So we still have the problem with electronic trading and the potential for flash crash, flash surge, which I don't think we've seen any of these flash surges before. But, you know, this is what's going on. The other thing that's happening right now, I'll mention to you, is that the debt ceiling in the U.S. is perilously close to exceeding the limit. As a matter of fact, it's $0.025 billion of the $16.7 trillion debt ceiling that's allowable by law right now. So this is data that was published on August 15th, I believe it was. And this is, we're talking about, we're talking about a very thin margin of number. I mean, more than that's going to be spent in a day or so, 2 days. And the question is going to be is how are they going to raise that and what's going to happen moving forward? Now, will we have the kind of dysfunction that we saw last time around when this went on in terms of the markets? Because remember what happened was that the markets realized after a while that, I think it's going to solve this problem. Who cares? But before that revelation happened, there was this, you know, terrible overreaching concern by investors that, oh my, governments can be shut down, which I think is a good thing for a little while. And, you know, we're going to have this problem where you're going to have all these layoffs and all that, which is not good, of course. And now we're back to that again, and the Republicans and the Dems are going to have all sorts of infighting about this, and they're going to, you know, try to hold up something or the other, or put something like, I don't know, who knows, they're going to put the healthcare reform on the block as something that has to be taken out, and there's going to be negotiations, and all sorts of, you know, internal fighting that goes on just to make everybody all sorts of anxious. So we'll see what happens with that. But, you know, the bottom line is, you know, that we're going to see some of that disruption in at least the headlines. And we'll see what happens. But that really wasn't well telegraphed. It was kind of buried in some of the headlines and some of the news that I saw. The other thing I'll mention is 3D printing. Some other news I saw that I thought was kind of cool. You got 3D printing and e-cigarettes, some of the disruptive themes that Goldman Sachs is thinking could really be significant. Goldman's thinking that the e-cigarettes could capture about 10% of the total volume of cigarettes by 2020. Now, I think if you listen to the DH Unplugged, I'll get back to that for a second. I had recommended, hey, I said, you know what? If these e-cigarettes really come on strong, what's going to happen to the core tobacco companies? So I looked at that, and Philip Morris I put on the short list for that. And, you know, it's been coming down a bit, but who knows if they come out with a competitor to it. But if they do come out with a competitor, then you got other problems. Now you got a cannibalism of their own products if they do so. So this is kind of an interesting thing here. We saw some 3D printing companies do very well recently. One of them, XONE, didn't do so well, but they have a very different product. Theirs is a big product that is customized. You have to use their facilities. Different than Stratasys and 3D, DDD, which I like. I like 3DD the best, or 3D the best. And you look at this and where they're going with this and the potential for the market, it really is pretty enormous. So I would keep your eyes on those stocks. They're very volatile, by the way, but I would keep your eyes on that. The other thing that you have to look at in the stock market right now is that big surge that we saw over the last several weeks of some of the companies that were really left for dead. I talked about this starting, I think, 2 weeks ago about how Cliffs, CLF, was poised to move, and boy, did it move. Hopefully you grabbed some of that. You saw the same thing with U.S. Steel. Of course, the gold miners have been moving in every direction, but with the direction of gold generally. But yet, at the same time, the question remains, is the big thrill ride with some of these over? Because it all started with the idea that China was doing much better in terms of their manufacturing from one report. And then they came back with some negative reports just right after that. And they also reaffirmed that they're going to slow down on the stockpile and manufacturing backlog that they have, or at least the backlog of materials that they have, because obviously their economy is slowing and they don't need to have as much supply. Yet at the same time, many of these companies really continue to surge. And the iron ore, the coal companies, I think that we're kind of on the edge of where it may be a time for a bit of a correction. Now, it may not be permanent, but a correction in some of these. Cliffs, as a matter of fact, CLF is the symbol. We took a small short position. We'll add on to that if it continues down. It did fall below its key support by, I don't know, 10, 15 cents. Not a big number, but about 1% lower than that level. And, you know, if that does fall, there is a pretty wide area of potential for the stocks to fall that have been moving up. Because if you look at the volume move and the reaction in terms of price, it was clearly a short squeeze. You could see it. It's just right there on the chart, and particularly when you put some of the indicators we use on it, it was a short squeeze. And that's fine. Many shorts were just saying, you know what, we've gotten so much profit out of this over the last however long, maybe it's time that we take some off the table here. And as the price continued to rise, it forced other short sellers to do the same. And then some buyers probably got on the bandwagon for it. And then what happens is it just ends up being a short squeeze. So what usually happens is you get those first people that investors out of the position that were in there for the short-term move. And that then turns it all back around. Short sellers then pile back in saying, hey, I got out of it over here. It's moving back up by 5, 10%. I'm going to reshort because I'll get it at a much better price than I would have had. So I don't think that the overall sentiment on these stocks has been so damaged to the upside right now compared to where it was that there's going to be a continuation unless there's just this bizarre rotation that will continue for a little time. But again, I think that you need to look at these as trading opportunities to the short side that could really be very beneficial. The final thing I want to kind of focus in on is what's going on with Apple. You know, we saw Apple come out of their earnings and things looked a little bit better. And then they kind of started to, you know, do well and okay, fine. And then we saw George Soros come out with this discussion and, you know, kind of taking a position. All this that went on, and that just drove the stock. And Icon then came out with something, and, you know, anyway, the bottom line was Icon. Forget about everything else. It really was Icon. Icon came out, and he said, you know, hey, this is my, you know, he tweeted the first tweet, Apple, blah, 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 talk with Tim Cook, all this. And the stock didn't stop since then. Now, one of the things you have to realize is that Friday, last Friday, was options expiration. And I just wonder how many options were pinned to the $500 level that was a little bit out of reach maybe when they initially took those options out. Because if you think about the move that Apple made, it was pretty much one of the better moves it made in a short period of time that Apple has had in years on the upside. So when you look at the fact that it pinned right out at about 501, I believe it was on the close on Friday, and that there was this stickiness around the 500 mark, you wonder, you know, how much Icon had in options or other players had in options at the 500 level on the call side that they were looking to really pump the stock up, and that, you know, you would see a potential move and reversal a little bit after the fact. So we're going to see Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of next week, and we'll go the whole week, see what the action is on Apple to get a little bit more of an interpretation of what really went on. Is it that people are warming up to the idea of Apple again, and it's going to be a great thing? It's the player. It's they're going to come up and come out with something extraordinary on September 10th. So you're kind of like buying the rumor, selling the news here, because they're going to come out with some new 5S or 6 or OS or whatever they're coming out with. And that's going to be highly receptive and bought up around the world. Or was this something just as simple as a ginormous pump and dump that was, you know, perpetrated on one of the biggest stocks, and that, you know, is very difficult to move, by the way, and probably surprised even the folks that, you know, put these comments out there that they can move the stock so dramatically. You know, if that's what it was, you're going to see kind of a letdown right here into maybe, you know, starting the end of the week into the September number, and then maybe a pop up into the September announcement a few days prior. And then what usually ends up happening is, unless it's something really extraordinary, something earth-shattering, different, and game-changing, that the possibility is you're going to see that Apple will, you know, consolidate back down a little bit here, and you'll get a better price on it if you want to pick it up. So I think that is something you put on your watch list and you take a look at, and, you know, mark the price where it ended on Friday. Look where the stock has gone from. Look for a potential retracement of some of that, as if in fact it was as simple as what I'm discussing here. And the time frame we're really looking at is the next 2-3 weeks into the Apple announcement of whatever the new product is, and, you know, if it's going to be something that is going to be really taken as just an absolute, you know, new revolution again by the street. So keep a look at that. All the other stocks I mentioned will be on the TDI website, thedisciplinedinvestor.com. We'll put those in the show notes in there so you can take a look at some of those. And also, all the information we talk about is always on the show notes, or a good amount of it, so you can check back on that. You'll find the earnings that are going to be uploaded and available Monday morning, first thing. So you'll see what's going on with earnings. You can take that. It's a nice report that you can just take a look at and use as a cheat sheet for the week ahead for the key earnings that are coming out. And make sure to stop by Trigger Point Research, Trigger Charts over on the TradeStation platform, and listen in to DH Unplugged this week. It should be a lot of fun. And of course, if you're looking for someone to manage money, we go short, we go long, we use options. You know, we have a very open level of investment strategy with the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy. Just go over to the little icon on the Disciplined Investor homepage, and you click that for a 13-minute virtual tour. Check it out, see what we're doing. And if this is something that you want to have and learn from, because we have a private blog for clients only, you have full access to your account, fully segregated from anybody else's assets, so it's your own. Cool stuff. Check it out. That's about it. Otherwise, I'll see you next week. Thanks for joining me. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.